Welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I am Chris Lorton. I am your host. And today, back again, because it's a long story, I have Craig Robeen with me. We went high school, college. Now we're talking his experience in professional football. Craig, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back. I didn't know I had so much to talk about until we start talking.
I did not know either. But it's a good talk.
Right.
It's good talk. Now, like I said, you know, we talked about some high school football, talked about some Indiana football, and then when you were playing football in Indiana, with all your buddies, was everybody that was on the team, was everybody thinking about going pro, making it in the NFL? Was that a common theme that you guys talked about?
Right. So I think that's one of the things that happens to a lot of college athletes is because everyone's been so successful their whole sports career to that point, they think that it will never end. And you see this still today, and you certainly see it when people leave the NFL, is there's not been a good plan B developed. So yeah, everyone is thinking, especially if they're playing, that, hey, I'm going to, you know, this ride's going to keep going, baby. Like, yeah, it's going to keep going. And I always tell anyone that's going to college for sports or any college kids that I've spoken to, I've always said, just remember, one day, everything that you love about this sport, it'll be gone. And all you'll be left with are the tools that you got from playing the sport and your education. So too many times that's forgotten on lost on these college athletes. So
yeah, you know, one thing you didn't comment too much on when you were at IU was how about classes? You know, I mean, going to school. I mean,
right,
there's a lot of studying going on too.
I mean, oh my gosh,
that had to be brutal.
The schedule. A lot of people, you just don't. You had to plan all your classes from 8 a.m. to noon. So all your classwork had to be done by then. And a lot of times you were over at the stadium doing walkthroughs from 6 a.m. to 7:30 or 5 to 7:30. And then you go to class from 8 to noon. You'd come over, you'd get taped up, you'd watch film from 1 to 3 or 1 to 2:30. You'd practice until 6. You would eat at training table, we called it. And then sometimes you'd watch film after. And a lot of times you'd have another class that went from 8 to 10 in the evening because those were the slots that met your schedule. So if you couldn't attend a class from 8 to noon in the morning, they offered classes that would go like once a week from or twice a week from 8 to 10 p.m. So your days were long.
I know you've probably figured this out. How many hours a week were you putting in?
I don't know, but I can tell you this for sure, and I'm not trying to stir up any, but you used to have to fill out a card every week for how many hours that you devoted to football per NCAA regulations. And I'm nearly certain that those cards were all fabricated or not representative of what was actually happening. You know, we put in a lot of time, right? And
40 hours?
Oh, easily. And that's not including Saturdays and Sundays, because in the season you obviously played on Saturday, and then Sundays you came in and watched film and worked out and did conditioning.
If you didn't have a work ethic, you got one.
Oh, yeah. Like if you're a punk like I was, you know, like a lot of us were in high school, you're either going to get weeded out or you're going to work it out, you know? You got to want it, right?
Yeah. So let's go on to your career as a professional football player.
Right. So I remember the first day showing up at Colts camp. You know, the thing that shocked me the most is I remember when I got to high school as a lineman, everyone would line up and the coach would say set hit and you would take a step over the board. Right.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking how mundane that was. And they were talking about how significant the first step is for a lineman. And then when I got to college, I thought, wow, I've made it big now. You know, surely we're not going to line up and step over the board. And sure as heck, we did. We lined up and we would step over the board. And then the first day in Colts training camp, I remember thinking, there's no way
we're going to do it.
And we did. So the message there in that little story is that the fundamentals, it does not matter what level you are at, the most important thing are the fundamentals. And when we watch film in the NFL, they'd let the play go for the first step and then rewind it. First step and rewind it. And you would be able to tell if you stepped under yourself or you didn't take a first step that gained ground, you were dead. The rest of the play was predicted. You cannot take a first step that does not gain ground and reach block an NFL defensive end or a tackle or anybody for that matter. And it was such a great lesson to see how significant that was. So to me, I remember summing it up to someone I was calling home and saying, you know, in college, even against Julius Peppers and Vonnie Holiday and Roosevelt Colvin, some of the best defensive ends, you know, Courtney Brown from Penn State, you could block, you could stop their first move and maybe they'd have a counter, but mostly they were done. You could lean against them and they would lean back against you. In the NFL, if you stop their first one, they have a counter. If you stop their counter, they have a counter. And if you lean on them, they'll throw you on your face. And if you sit too far back on your heels, they'll run you over. You had to know exactly what you were doing, take a proper first step, arrive at the defender with force, and then finish every play or you would get beat.
When you talk about moving from high school to IU and from IU to the NFL, what's the difference? I mean, how would you rate that if you were going to rate it somehow?
The step is equal in terms of how gigantic it is. I had some preparation for the NFL because one of my best friends at Indiana, and it was an All-American, Adewale Ogunleye, he was a Nigerian, and he went on to be an NFL All-Pro with the Dolphins. He led the NFL in sacks, and then he got a big contract with the Bears for 5 years. He had a long career, so I played against him every day in practice for 5 years. So I knew what an NFL defensive end looked like, and he was one of the best. So,
however, had that going for you,
right? So, and it's funny. So you're in Colts training camp, right? And you're standing in the huddle. This is how you know you have a chance. When you walk into the huddle, there's Peyton Manning, there's Edgerrin James, there's Marvin Harrison, and you're going into, you know, teams with them, right? And when you go to preseason games, you're in the game with the second group, right? You're being seriously considered. And you do everything right. And it's funny how life, especially in retrospect, and I realized at the moment, could boil down to just like one moment. And our head coach was Jim Mora at the time. And he was the kind of guy, when he walked in the room, you sat up straight and you held your breath and you shut up. Or you're going to get fined. You know, everyone they would remember him. He's the guy who said, playoffs? You want to talk about playoffs? You know, that's Jim Mora. That was the coach at the Colts at the time, right?
Right.
From the Coors Light commercials. But anyway, I specifically remember we were doing one-on-one pass rush, and I was going against the starting defensive end for the Colts, and his name was Chad Bratsky. He was really good. And he gave me a move, and I stoned him. And, I mean, I worked him good. And Coach Mora was there to see that. And then we went back to our places in line, and Coach Moore is like, no, I want to see Chad and Craig again. And I thought, oh boy, you know, I knew. I'm like, this is it, right? And instead of relying on my instinct, I lined up and he lined up wide. And I thought, I know what he's doing. And instead of just reacting, I guessed. And I overset him. And he beat me clean inside, which is a cardinal sin for an offensive lineman. Coach Mora put his head down and walked away. And while at the moment I thought it was substantial, I didn't think it was everything. But in retrospect, I feel like that was my moment, you know, because it was so close. So at the end of camp on August 22nd, I was in the weight room. Ken Dilger from Illinois was my lifting partner, by the way. He was the tight end that played at Illinois and had a great NFL career. So we were in the weight room, and they were coming in, and this is how you get cut. They come in and say, hey, Coach Mora wants to see you. And they pulled the offensive tackle from Georgia. And I was like, and then the starting OT for the Colts, Adam Meadows, came. He says, man, dude, you're in. You know, Paul's gone. Like, you're in. Because at that time, Jeff Saturday had won his starting job. Went on to be an all pro player, and he was undersized. He was an excellent technician, and that kind of shuffled things up. But at the end of the day, Coach Mora called me in and the rookie from Tennessee and said, we're going to release both of you and we're going to sign one of you back to the inactive roster. Now, this is probably the most common misconception I hear people talk about NFL. And I don't know if it's different today, but at that time, a practice squad consisted of 5 to 7 people on the whole team. This was not a whole team of people that just practiced against the Colts.
I got you.
So
you had to be universal then.
Right. You had 5 starting offensive linemen. You had 2 active backups. That means they were getting full pay. And then you had 1 inactive player that basically practiced with the team, so he knew the play. So if someone got injured, then he got activated. So if you were a practice squad player at that time, you were making $50,000, right? And an active rookie was making $250,000. So to me, either one of those jobs was a serious upgrade so at the time. But, you know, so look, that didn't work. And I'll tell you, that was as close as I got. And I know we're going to talk about Scotland and Oakland, but it was very difficult to grow up with relatively no money and be that close to the money.
Yeah.
And then to be shut down, right?
Hey, so, if you're just joining us, I have Craig Robeen with me. We're talking about his pro football career. Craig, so go on.
So yeah, after the after being cut by the Colts, it was kind of unfortunate to be cut at the end of camp, because a lot of people, if you get cut early on, it gives another team that was interested in you a chance to pick you up.
Yep.
Being cut at the end, kind of everybody was, you know, ready settling on their rosters. So I had the winter, and again, I did a better job of working out during that time than I did before I went to college from high school. And I was about to give up, you know, because there's a lot of truth to the fact that your window of opportunity in the NFL is just so small.
Yeah.
Because if you're a rookie and you win a job against a guy that's a year older, let's say that person was making $300,000 as a second year minimum player and you're getting paid $250,000. If you're as good as them, they're going to cut the second year guy and they're going to put you on.
Save you $50,000.
Right. And the next year, if a rookie came in and he was as good as you, you're going to get cut and they're going to take the rookie. So the joke always was, the same thing that'll get you into the NFL will get you out of the NFL.
That's right.
And the guys that you hear about that get the big contracts, those are the exceptions, right? Yeah. They've made it 3 years. They're obviously better than everybody else and they get the big contract.
What percentage of people on a pro team, okay, on a typical roster, or that exception? What would you say?
Look, if there was throughout training camp, you're coming in with maybe 80 and cutting down to 45. When you walk into an NFL training camp, it's like probably every other team. There's a couple outstanding players, and then there's everybody else.
Okay,
and
so those, just a few. Just
yeah, I mean, you had Tariq Glenn was the starting left tackle. He was incredible. And, of course, Peyton Manning was and is right. special. And there are people like that. Like, you know, when I was in Oakland, it was Jerry Rice, and there were some offensive linemen. And, you know, there's people that are just better than everybody else. And the NFL is no different. But leaving that experience, I got called in January. Hey, Craig, we got an opportunity for you down here in Tampa for an NFL Europe training camp, which is a league that's now defunct. Okay. So if you got sent to the NFL Europe, and at this time, the XFL, the Vince McMahon League, happened at the same time when I was this age. I don't know if you remember that. He kind of made a run at the NFL as an alternative league. And I had an opportunity to go play in the XFL and make really good money at that time.
Yeah.
But your agent's like, hey, those guys are all going to be, you know, blackballed coming back in the NFL. So you want to go to the NFL Europe because you're guaranteed a contract with an NFL training camp coming back. So, however, I don't want to get too down the weeds here, but it's interesting. All the players that go to the NFL Europe were allocated. So, like, if you played for Scotland, you would have, like, a Colts logo on the crest of your jersey here about your neckline.
Okay.
I was not allocated. I was called as a walk-on, so to speak, and I was the only non-allocated player to end up starting in the NFL Europe that year. And I called the Colts coach and said, why didn't you allocate me? you allocated a guy that was cut in minicamp. And he goes, look, they call and ask me for two people. I gave them two names. Some people take this really seriously. Some people don't, you know. But long story short, I go down to Tampa, I have a great camp. I end up being out of the, you know, 15 or so linemen, I end up being one of the seven they take to Europe. I was a starter on the Scottish team. And I got to live in Glasgow, which was really, really cool experience at that age. And it was a 10-week season. And again, you know, you talk about football, you're talking about toughness.
How did the Scotlands like football? How did Europe like football? American football?
That's a great question. The Germans loved it. So when we played against the German teams in Berlin, Dusseldorf, and Frankfurt, their stadiums would be full. You'd have 40 or 50,000 people there. In Scotland, we played in front of about 15 or 20,000. So, okay. You know, look, when you say football over there, they think you're talking about soccer.
Right.
But Germany had a good, strong following, and I think they're still
Has it grown over the years?
You know, you see the NFL, when, you know, they play
they're
that game in London.
Playing, yeah.
I think eventually they see an NFL team in London. I can't speak to that, but clearly they like that market. They're trying to grow, and that's a potential. But back then it was more or less a farm league.
Okay.
So
you were played for that team for and then came on back? What happened?
Yeah, so it was funny. Towards the end, the second to last game of the year, I tore my pec in a game, and they immediately
tore your pec.
Yeah, so it was hot.
defensive, how did you tear your pec?
Well, or tore a fat, whatever you want to say. But the defensive end was a hot day. Gave me an inside move, and I jammed him, and it was really hot, and it just tore. Oh. You know. And they flew a tackle in from Louisville that next week, and they were getting ready to send me down to Birmingham to rehab. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? They're like, well, you're done. We're sending you back to Birmingham. I'm like, I'm not leaving, you know? And they're like, well, look, the only way you're playing next week is if you can get on the ground and do 50 push-ups the morning of the game. So I got on the ground and did 50 push-ups with a torn pec so I could play that last game. And shortly thereafter, you know, I come home.
Did that hurt quite a bit?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm standing on French Street in Hardin, and a FedEx truck is driving around town trying to figure out where 510 French Street is, and he's got my Oakland Raiders contract, which I remember walking outside and staring around at the street thinking, I wonder how many times this has ever happened. But
so Oakland had a contract for you.
Yeah, they had a contract, and look, I got done with that NFL Europe season in late June. So you're at the end of a season. You've been through football seasons,
right?
A training camp, a season, and you know how you feel at the end of that season.
Sure.
Your body is
yeah. You need a break.
And so 2 weeks later to turn around, and plus when I was in Scotland, they had the hoof and mouth and the mad cow going on for all 12 weeks I was there.
Oh boy!
So you couldn't eat any red meat. So if anybody wants to know how you lose weight. I did not eat any red meat for 12 weeks, and I went from 318 pounds to 278 pounds by changing nothing else.
Craig Robine diet.
And I haven't done it since, obviously. But that happened. So when I got to Oakland, they're like, we thought you were 320. And I was like, well, not anymore. So long story short, when they talk about a camp body, when you're reduced to a camp body, that means you're not working in the huddle with Peyton Manning or Rich Gannon or Tim Brown and Jerry Rice. And I realized right away that it wasn't going to work. And I wanted to go on my terms. So I knew 100% that I was going to be cut, right? Yeah. So I went up to John Gruden after practice one night and said, hey, I want to be released. You know, I got in a fight the first day in practice because I thought, I'm not going to be given a chance here, so I was trying to make an impression. And the starting linemen don't like it when you go hard against them in practice.
So I hear you.
So there was a fight. I got thrown out of the drill, and I never got back into any of the drills. And it was just clear that it wasn't going to work. There wasn't an opportunity, really. So Gruden was really cool. He said, hey, man, you know, look, he was doing his job. We'd really like to have you back anytime and come inside and eat dinner with me and we'll get you on a red eye. And I did. I went in there and I ate dinner with John Gruden and we just kind of talked like just, you know, it was really a nice ending for me. And why I like that is because I don't have a sad story. You know, so many people that don't make it in high school or college or the NFL, there's always the, you know, oh, I got hurt, or, you know, I got screwed, or politically. No, I had every opportunity. And the truth of it is, like every other athlete, eventually you will get to a point where you're not good enough anymore to play that sport, where physically you can't do it.
Yeah.
And I got there, and I'm proud of that. You know, yeah. It was great.
Well, we're all proud of you, especially Calhouners. Hooners are definitely proud of you. And you know what? We've ran out of time, but everything you did in your college football career has definitely helped you. You got a great career,
right?
Working for
Altorf
Caterpillar.
Yeah,
it's been good for you.
Yeah,
and you're a family man. You got children, 3 girls.
Yeah,
you got a great life going.
Right,
and you're just getting started. Well, Craig, thanks so much for coming in. We've had a great time, and we'll see you around.
Thank you.